All right, we're back into some terms, and if you've been following along with the glossary, you may well have found a few things that need to be added to the glossary, both things that I've mentioned and missed adding to it, or things that you've run across that you really could use the refresher in rather than relying on your memory. Write it down. It's an open book test after all. So let's take a look at some of the repair system terminology that's specific to these Poisson processes and repair systems in general. So like most of the things we're dealing with in most disciplines, there are specific terms and terminology that we use. Now, there's been lots of discussions and different groups of people writing standards, and some of which I've been a part of, and within organizations where the terms we use may have very specific meanings. And so some years ago, Henry Archer put down a couple of papers on repairable items, and he kind of created the standard for the terminology we use. But you'll see variations, I'm quite sure, in different places. So a part is a component, in my mind, an element that you get in the storeroom or you buy in a catalog, and once it fails, you just throw it away. So it might be a small motor that's not repairable, or it might be a flange that once it's bent, it really doesn't serve its purpose anymore. And if you bend it back, you actually have a much weaker item. And so it wouldn't be appropriate to put it back into service. So parts is something I think of as components. A socket. Now this is used in primarily a common term for electronics is an element that receives another component. So you might have a socket for an integrated circuit or a memory chip, something like that. So it would hold another particular part. It's a common word for or a socket is used for that kind of device, something that holds something else. Now, sockets are commonly used when I want to be able to replace the memory. Now, it could either be to replace faulty memory chips or to increase the density of memory that's used, increase its capacity. You might also use those in systems that come in different models. So you put in one set of components that have a particular, say, a lower level of functionality. But if somebody paid more, you could send them just the replacement parts, these parts that then go into the sockets, and they would get additional functionality. It's a couple different reasons to use sockets. Now, a system, we're making a big jump here, is a collection of sockets and parts and so on. Now, I should mention with sockets that it also is where you're connecting different boards together. So if I have a motherboard that's connected to a power supply, that's connected to a hard drive, those interconnects pieces are considered sockets according to this set of definitions. But if I change just the hard drive, say to a higher capacity hard drive, it's very much the same kind of idea where I have an interchangeable part that integrates with the rest of the system using a socket. Now, the system is a collection of these parts, basically, to perform some function. So a computer or a camera or your car each have their particular function or set of functions. And we've often heard of, even more recently, the idea of system of systems. So you might have a communication system and a targeting system and a propulsion system and a handful of other things that then makes a weapon system on a battlefield functional. So it may be relying on satellite imagery and on satellite-based navigation systems and on various communication systems and even ground-based systems to, say, laser targeting, for example, to bring it finally right in on target. But it also has to have a propulsion system, steering system, and communication systems, and so on. So a system, though, is usually a discrete item. Think of a car is a system, but it includes propulsion and communication and environmental controls, and it involves all kinds of different parts, the fuel system, electrical system, and so on. So What we're looking at is that it's a device that basically you would buy, like a computer or a car would be a system. Now, there's different kinds of systems. There's non-repairable systems, which are ones that, we're not going to fix. Now, I think it's technically possible to repair most types of systems or any kind of system, but at some point it becomes non-economical. So I think I had an image of a small alarm clock on the in one of the previous slides, in one of the lessons. Something like that may cost $5 or $10, and it may cost you $30 or $40 to do a repair on it. So economically, it's not feasible or not reasonable to do a repair, whereas technically you probably can. So think of it more in the terms of, well, how are we normally going to treat this system when it fails? If we just replace it and maybe send that component off somewhere else for disposal or for retrofit or something else, we probably are treating it not as a non-repairable system. On the other hand, repairable systems are ones like my car, where if I need to replace a fuel pump, the rest of the system is operating just fine, but a faulty fuel pump would keep it from operating. So it gets replaced and then back up and running and up on the road again. But there it makes economic sense to do the repair. A fuel pump might cost me a couple hundred dollars to get replaced, whereas buying a new car would be in the tens of thousands of dollars, for example. So in that case, it makes a lot of sense to have those repairs done to keep the system running. Whereas if it was a inexpensive component or one that was technically not possible to be repaired, I'm thinking of the example of the credit card readers at the store. From what I understand, those things are sealed with a number of devices on them that make them impossible to access. So repairing those is really not possible. It self-destructs essentially beyond repair if you try to open those systems. So those are truly non-repairable systems. So I think those are some of the terms we're dealing with. Here's one you may not be as familiar with. It's the rate of occurrence of failures, or peril rate. And we're going to use MFT to designate it. Now, it's similar to a hazard function. It's basically the instantaneous chance of occurrence. So at any given time, we have an expected number of failures. There's the N of T is the cumulative number of failures up to some point in time. And when we take the derivative of that, it gives us what's the instantaneous chance of failure, or expect number of failures at that point in time. So maybe it's similar to hazard rate, but not quite the same. Although I'm not sure I'm going to explain this well enough to dispel any confusion. So take a close look at the reading. And so a hazard rate, if I'm looking at a system or, say, a collection of systems, a fleet of vehicles, for example, I know that I've got some infant mortality element, right? There's a handful of vehicles are going to have problems right out the door, right? They're going to have manufacturing defects. They're going to have some latent defects that manifest early and so on. And then over time, they're going to do okay and maybe increase in failure rate and then eventually wear out. Now, I'm not drawing the flat part perfectly flat because I don't think that actually ever occurs. But eventually, one or more of the wear out mechanisms will gang up and cause a failure. And so at any point in time, the hazard rate is the instantaneous failure rate. Right, so I can get an average failure rate by taking the average of the heights of all of these things up to that point in time, or I can get an instantaneous failure rate. What's the chance of failing given that it's this old in the next unit of time? So for people, we see these tables and it might be, what's my chance of dying in the next year? Mortality tables is one way to look at that. Now, that's very similar to a peril rate, or this rate of occurrence of failures. So instead of looking at, say, mortality where you're failing, what's the chance of you going to the doctor's office? And what's your very similar to a failure rate, you need to go get some repair work done. But here I'm going to be tracking the number of failures that occur, rather than, because I have a repairable system. So I'm going to track, well, how many failures occur early in a system's operation. And once again, I may have infant mortality type issues, and I may have a flat part and a wear out part. But the idea is that it's the cumulative operating time, which is similar to age, if you think about it, but it's power on time. So if I'm running a factory piece of equipment, it's how many hours of operation does it have. And the peril rate is the of all the failures it has over these different operating time, how many do I expect in some interval of time? So given its previous history, the peril rate may be very different for different pieces of equipment when you look at it on a calendar time, because one may be operating 100% of the time, the other one operating 50% of the time. So it's using operating time rather than calendar time. And subtle difference, but essentially they're bathtub curves, and they're similar in the way we work with them. The MFT and has associated other formulas and functions with it, but it gives us a way to describe what's the chance of having to do a repair over some interval. And those are the types of calculations we'll be doing. Now, for the homogeneous Poisson process, we're basically assuming that it has an exponentially distributed times to failure, that it has the memoryless feature, that it has all those other elements of it. So keep those in mind as you're looking at whether we're dealing with a homogeneous Poisson process or a non-homogeneous process, which is what we'll start talking about or discuss briefly in the next segment.